Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Another edition of the live Predictable Revenue Podcast. I am your co-host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by my co-host and best-selling author of Predictable Revenue, cardboard cutout Aaron Ross. The real Aaron was sick today, so we took the one that we stash in our office, him and his very favorite Jason Lemkin t-shirt. And he's just going to hang out here, probably chime in. He'll do the color commentary. I'll do the play-by-play. And Jamie here has the content for us. Today, we have a very special guest, and he's very different from our usual guests in a very good way. But first, how he got here. We surveyed our audience earlier this year to ask, you know, what are your top questions about prospecting, about predictable revenue? And many of you asked about, how do I build an ideal customer profile, an account list? And once I've built them, how do I make sure I build a plan and actually execute those? And so in a way that's actually turning into meaningful booked meetings. So our guest today has a really unique perspective on the account-based model that he's going to share. He's also widely recognized as one of North America's leading social selling experts and has personally built social selling programs in nearly every industry, ranging from small startups to the Fortune 500. Our guest today is Jamie Shanks, and he's the CEO for Sales for Life. Welcome to the podcast, Jamie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Colin, for the invite. I appreciate it.
Great. So let's jump right in. Where do you start when a customer comes to you, or somebody, a sales rep comes to you and says, "Hey, Jamie, I need to build my account list. I don't have an account list," right? So maybe let's start there for the companies or for the salespeople that don't have an account list. Their company, for whatever reason, hasn't handed it down to them. Where's that starting point for you?
For me, it's understanding that I can create leads and opportunities leveraging our existing customer base. So where I would start, and where I had started when I created Sales for Life, is I take a look at the social proximity of successes, advocates, anybody that would be able to tell a story of what I've done to help them. So as an example, you take a customer of yours and you put them in a center of a sheet of paper and then draw a circle around that customer's logo and try to identify the people that are within their sphere of influence. So Colin, as an example, you as a person have your own sphere of influence. Those are your mom, your roommates from college, your existing team members, your past team members, your vendors and partners. And so do the exact same concept. I'm a seller. I have not been assigned accounts. I could, of course, just start calling random companies, or I could take a look at the last 10 deals that our company has signed, plot them on a map, and discern essentially who is interrelated to that company, from people that used to work there, people that work there today, vendors, partners, competitors. Long of the short is you'll start to develop an ecosystem of the people that actually care about the successes or failures that you had within that organization. That is the first degree of sphere of influence. The velocity and the conversion of those going from, say, conversation to lead or lead to customer are so much greater than just picking up the phone and calling random companies out of the phone book. That's where I would start.
Perfect. So I imagine that list is only going to get you so large, 50, 100 customers. You know, there's 5 to 10 individuals. So that's a pretty good starting base. Mm-hmm. What are some ways, I mean, in some cases that could be actually, you know, a very, very large list. Aaron just reminded me, he's like, some companies have 1,000 customers. So we could be talking, you know, 10,000 prospects. What are some different ways, if you have so many of them, how do you segment these?
Yep. So then I would double to click into, well, two parts. Number one, am I a seller who has been assigned a vertical and or a geographic territory? So of course, I'm going to then segment out the leads that make sense there. But then what I'm also probably want to do is take a look at the customers that we've signed and do a bit of an analysis. For us, we call it WIL, like what's ideal look like. But it's also known as ICPs, your ideal customer profile. Take a look at, where do they live? What industries are they in? Is it always the same sort of customer that seems to not only become a customer, but have successful implementations and become lifelong customers? That's the other important thing. They're not kind of one and done customers. So just, and of course, we could dive endlessly into what kind of analysis you should do, but at a high level, peer into your customer base and try to figure out what are the trends and commonalities here. And that's where I'm going to segment a very specific list. I'll give you an example. When I started this business, I recognized that yes, I had success in the technology space, but that didn't mean that living here in Toronto, Canada, I was automatically going to start calling companies into Boston and San Francisco. I ate my dog food in the town that I lived. So I started concentrating on Toronto-based companies who, of course, had satellite offices in other cities. And I started with a geographic model intermixed with a certain vertical I wanted to go after, which was technology companies.
Gotcha. And so when you're pulling all this data together, is this just spreadsheet time?
It can be. I mean, at the end of the day, for us, you know, we've used Salesforce.com. So it, if you've set up your CRM correctly, it can provide you intelligence. For us, it can tell us what lead sources have greater conversion or velocity or probability. You just need to use some form of information to provide you intelligence. But at the end of the day, if you have to zip drive it into spreadsheets, you do, just whatever makes sense.
Gotcha. So putting this list together is only half the battle, right? I can't remember the number of times where I've had this, like what I think is the perfect target list. And then I'm like, okay, do I just like pick up the phone? What do I do next? Like, help me sort of bridge the gap between here's my list, here's what I've been trained to do, and then here's what I'm actually going to do when I sit down at my computer.
And this is the transition from an analog seller to what we believe is a digital seller. As an analog seller, I've built a list, 50 accounts. Great. I'm going to pick up the phone, start calling A through Z. I don't know that at the end of the day, Topo does a fantastic study on this, and they said that 83.4% of sales professionals, specifically inside sellers like SDRs, fail because of time management challenges. So what I want to do next is create some sort of account segmentation plan. And where I'm going to use is technology, digital technology, to help feed me information, which accounts are hot, medium, and cold. So as an example for us, we love to use video conferencing, video communication platforms like Vidyard, or we'll use LinkedIn and we'll create LinkedIn point drives. And so imagine I have 50 accounts. Now I'm sharing best practices to people within those accounts. Not only am I calling and using social messages, I'm emailing, but I'm using information baked into a digital tool that can register who's watching, who's engaged, who's not. So immediately after some of these touch points, I start to develop a path. There are those that weren't engaged in touch point one, and there are those that were, and here were their results. And they go down path A, and then path B, there are those that weren't engaged. I'll have multiple attempts, and at some point, it'll have a diminishing return on my time, and I'll say, okay, well, maybe they just don't make sense. That's where you have to start. Use technology to help you in advance plan a storyboard, what you're going to say along these multiple paths, like choose your own adventure, but use technology to help you discern who do I spend most of my time with, because it's always a Pareto's law. 20% of accounts are going to yield you 80% of the impact or 80% of the result. So figure out through technology, which are those 20%.
Gotcha. I want to just go back. There's something that you mentioned that I think it sounds like a really interesting thing you do that we just kind of glossed over. You mentioned a LinkedIn points drive.
LinkedIn point drive. Yes. So this is a tool, and it's, companies may be accustomed to using tools such as ClearSlide, and all these are microsites in which you can store information, videos, PDFs, Word documents, and share this information to customers, and they can peer into this microsite or landing page, and any asset that's within this microsite that you share via email or social has trackable cookies. This concept has been around for a while. But the nice thing is that LinkedIn has embedded this into their LinkedIn Navigator application. So now coming with my LinkedIn account is also one of these tools.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Haven't seen that before.
Yeah. So it, for us, this is one of the core resource tools to use at multiple stages in the funnel, whether it's trying to create awareness and intrigue at the top of the funnel, and again, account segmentation, or I could use it late in the funnel where I'm submitting proposals and I'm trying to figure out, did the CFO look at this? Were there people peering at contract A versus contract B? Who should I spend my time with? All of that information is given to me at the sales rep level through LinkedIn Point Drive.
This is just giving you all that detail inside of the tornado, what's actually happening.
Exactly. It shows me every person with a LinkedIn account, what they've looked at, how long they've looked at, all of the information within that microsite.
Great. So coming back to your storyboard, we've mapped out, you know, here's all my buying influences, here's all the research, all the key players. How do we keep this fresh? Because, you know, if you only have 50 accounts, right, you send them everybody an article, you know, once a month, that's going to get boring pretty quickly. How do you keep it fresh and engaging and without getting annoying, right? There's always that balance of, I want to be in touch with them on a regular basis, but I want to be driving value, right? But I don't want to be touching them too frequently where they're like, I wish this guy would just leave me alone.
A great account-based seller will have built a storyboard in advance. So let's make this a real life example. So for us, we have a five touch point cadence. Okay, so my story is going to be about the importance that sales leaders, as an example, play in the transitioning a seller from analog to digital. And so I'll share a little bit of information. I'll share a video up front. And then next week, as an example, that might go a little bit deeper into a case study done by Forrester on that same topic. Then the next one might be a webinar that includes Aaron Ross, Jason Lemkin, and Jill Rowley all on stage talking about the best leaders are the ones that are willing to bring a horse to water and drink it first kind of thing. So I build these storyboards out in advance because it's a time management challenge. One of the biggest problems for sellers is, okay, it says in Salesforce, I need to follow up with this account, or I'm using SalesLoft baked on top of my CRM. It says I need to follow up. I don't know what to say. I can't just say the same thing I said last week. It's best to have a playbook in advance. And some of the best customers we've worked with have these storyboards built in advance. And they've kind of got five sales plays that they use to engage a customer. And that engagement helps them dictate where they kind of shape the conversation. Build it in advance as part of your account planning.
Gotcha. And so this is not just the, you know, account executive planning this out. This is the director of sales, VP of sales, maybe even marketing. I mean, we had Franco. I'm going to butcher your last name, Franco. If you're listening, I'm very sorry. But Caporale, I'm, again, totally wrong. It's an Italian name and I'm, yeah. But he was on here, he's the on the marketing side of things, and he talked about how he spends his time just to empower his SDRs and give them a great reason to reach out to prospects. It sounds a lot like what we're talking about here. You're storyboarding out all of these different approaches, playbooks, yep, however you want. Can you give me some examples of the different styles? So you give me an example of one specific one where it's sort of the educational one of leading them down one sort of pathway, but what are some other ways that they could build these storyboards?
Okay, so and it comes back to as a digital seller, there are three types of selling. You have trigger-based selling, referral-based selling, and insights-based selling. And so along your storyboard, for me, one of my favorite first touch points, if this was a Venn diagram of three types of sales processes, trigger, referral, and insights, I like to start touch point one with either a trigger or a referral. So it was a job change alert as an example of a trigger, or you just raised capital, that's a trigger, and or referral. You're connected to a customer of ours, here was the successes. So that's typically for me, touch point one. I love video, where we have customers that will use phone first, social or video as touch point number two. But now you get into touch point number two or three. I'll give you an example. Dan on our team, what he started doing really well was he started taking companies. He would pick an industry and he would find the public companies within that industry and he would read the Form 10-K of the CEO's quarterly or annual notes on a particular one of those public companies, and it would tell you who are their competitors, pitfalls, challenges, and their SWOT analysis. He would then make videos to not only the company, that particular company, but all the other companies in the industry, talking about what's going on in the industry and the pitfalls and challenges. Then, as an example, in touch point number three, we might actually do some competitive benchmarking. For us, we're a training company, so we'll do competency benchmarks. We'll then pull data to show whether it's third-party data, Gartner information, or audited by us, and we'll build something and share this one visual that says, here's where you stack rank against your competitors. So each one, again, if you really have the time, especially if you're selling enterprise level, you'll have kind of thought through these this story in advance. They all kind of interlink. Like, think of it as like a comic book strip, right? They're all kind of interlaced and interlinking. But otherwise, we'll use these various different styles or mediums to get their attention along a journey of, you know, as I said, triggers and referrals. Then I'm going to tell you about what's going on in your industry based on Form 10K notes. Then I'm going to do audit information. Then I'm going to share you a case study written by Forrester on why you need to change today and not tomorrow. We'll use it any and all. And then you start mailing them gifts if you have to.
Gifts or gifts?
Gifts, like wrapped in a bow, mailed to the office.
Cool. That's actually one of the things Franco was talking about on his podcast. We've had another guy come on and talk about GIFs or GIFs as well, if you prefer the dark side.
Yeah. I never know how to pronounce it. I call it GIF.
I go with GIF. I've heard arguments for both, but that's a different podcast altogether, I think. So we've got everything storyboarded out. We've got our different variations of these storyboards that we can run. Actually, before we jump, you mentioned you had your Venn diagram with three different ways. The first one was referrals. The second one was a trigger. What was the third one?
Insights, right? So
insights. Okay.
And just so everybody understands, basically, trigger is an example. Colin, you just did a Series A. You now plowed $5 million in your bank. That's a compelling event in which you're going to need to deploy that money and expand. Referral, Colin, I notice you're connected to Aaron. Connect me. Let's have a conversation with the three of us. And insights is, I just read this article where Aaron and Jason Lemkin are doing this massive event in February at Saster. One of the things they talked about was this particular challenge. Here's how we could help and have a conversation about it.
Great.
Yeah.
So we've got our storyboards that base off of one of these three styles. How do we connect that to the day to day and make sure we're actually executing this on a daily basis, turning this all this great planning into productivity?
And this is something that you can do in an analog world. Take a spread, and this is a really important exercise, especially for young sellers. Take a spreadsheet. Build it into blocks of time, starting from, say, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., whatever your workday is. Let's call it 50 hours, 50 blocks. What you need to do is plan in advance. What are account planning times? What are batching is one of the most critical time management skills you could ever learn. What are times where I'm account planning, storyboarding, acquiring information, due diligence to have a conversation? What are times, and which is a bigger allotment, what are times where I'm engaging customers, phone, email, smoke signals, it doesn't really matter how. And then what are times where you're deploying a variety of different calls? And Brian on our team did a great job, and he'll segment, there are three types of calls. You have discovery, you have kind of build and proposal, and then you have kind of service. And he'll kind of make sure that he has, a good segment of it. But you try to batch everything. So as an example, if you are, and this is where you should know your own kind of body. For me, I would love where I'm doing back-to-back demos, like Thursday mornings as an example, an 8 a.m., a 9 a.m., a 10 a.m., 11. All my demos, my discovery demos are Thursday mornings. Maybe all my proposal and contract conversations, you try to structure on Friday mornings, as an example. And then the rest, you build out this program. And one of the advices that I was given once was a human being, after about 90 minutes, kind of really needs to stop and recharge their batteries. So make it in 60 to maybe even up to 90 minute blocks and say, I'm going to do engagement reach outs for 90 minutes, pause, take 15 minutes off, come back. But do not think that you could do call research, stop that mindset, jump on the phone, call, stop, do one call, do a demo, and then stop, and then go into a boardroom meeting. Like, it just, it crushes your energy level and your momentum. So batching that time.
There's been significant research into the impact of context switching on your brain.
Oh.
And we had somebody in talking to about our engineering and our product team about, you know, the cost of context switching, and it can be, you know, as high as 15 minutes just to switch between one task to another, just for your brain to get back into a productive mode. I mean, you can certainly alt tab and you're looking at something new, but it's going to take you 15 minutes to really load that whole, you know, mental program into your brain, and then for the program to actually start producing anything of value.
I fully agree. And as a CEO, what I've tried to do is dedicate days to different departments of a business, because in a business, you have marketing, sales, you know, operations, finance. And if I spent an hour or two in each, I wouldn't be able to see by the end of the day.
No, it'd be crazy. I ended up blocking off, you know, I've been a big fan of the time blocking system. I block off all of my mornings, and I only occasionally have, you know, it's blocked off until 11 every single day. And I only occasionally allow a meeting to sneak in there.
Yeah.
And I found that's been the number one biggest productivity hack for me as a CEO. And honestly, I got that from reading a sales book years and years ago.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one, so I apologize, but they're all good.
I don't remember either where I got it from either.
Yeah. Probably came from somewhere else, but anyway. So we're segmenting our time. How do you sort of break it down? Like you break down your game plan as you've got time for research, you've got time for calls, you've got time for, you're batching all of these different tasks. Do you actually schedule these into your calendar?
As a sales professional, absolutely. And you really, a great seller understands that they have the ability to control their calendar. And weak or younger sellers don't realize that. They'll ask a customer, when, you know, we get off a discovery call, when do you want to meet next? And the seller then opens up their calendar, and they then control your time. Hmm. And great sellers will realize, okay, I have 50 hours in this particular week. I want to dedicate no more than 20, 25% of my time to research, but those are going to be during dead times. For me, and I know my human body. For me, I get up every morning at 5 a.m. I'm here in the office, depending on traffic, at 7:30 in the morning. Right now, it's 3 p.m. Eastern Standard, and I already feel it in my own body. Like, I would not be able to start banging out calls an hour from now. It's just not who I am. I want to do all my business development just like you, 8 a.m. or even 7:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Then I'm for... where I need to be the most energetic. I then, of course, want to do discovery calls, proposal calls, and closing deals, maybe early morning or early afternoon at the latest. For me, right now, my body would be kicking in to tomorrow's plan. I'm literally would be building tomorrow's account list and call research right now for tomorrow, even though I know that technically we're still in call execution time. For my body, I'm just burning up leads because I just wouldn't have the energy for it.
Yeah. So it's all about knowing your rhythm and that works for you. And I think the one thing that's very easy to miss is that you're actually blocking off in your calendar. You know, so for those of us that use, you know, one of those links where your customers, your prospects can click and grab anytime they want, actually having these blocks, you know, not, you know, Calendly or whatever it is that you use, not unable to book a time during these slots was one of the most powerful, you know, changes I made to my day in the last year.
Absolutely. I used to try to do 8 demos on Thursdays was my demo day. I just remember it as a, I used to try to do one every hour for 8 hours because I would carry stories from call A into call B. And I'd say, like, I just got off the phone talking about this. I would be in such a rhythm to be in a teacher-student environment. Whereas if I did one demo a day, I'm like dusting off the rust each time I'm doing it. Yeah, absolutely.
So we've talked about, you know, making sure that we're executing on this daily. We've talked about building our account plan and having these plans. You know, I want to leave some time at the end for us to open it up to questions for the group here. But maybe before we do that, can you give me some examples of like where do most companies screw this up when they're doing sort of geographical and vertical based reps?
Yeah. So two biggest places I see people screw up. Number one, around the account selection. And they don't realize it, that they've handicapped themselves so early on in this process. They create lists based on what's called wallet share. I'll give an example. I'm a geo-based rep dedicated British Columbia, Vancouver, as an example. I go online, Google, Profit Magazine, Inc. Magazine, largest companies in Vancouver. Great, 1-800 got junks on that list. And I start calling A through Z. The problem, yes, from a strategic standpoint, these are great logos. When you win one, it will do a huge dent into your sales quota attainment. The problem is you didn't think through velocity. How long is it going to take you to get inside the four walls of 1-800 got junk and win that deal? That might take you 2 years. That is counterproductive to month by month quota or quarter by quarter quota. So interlacing that with the selection of accounts that can increase the probability or velocity. And by doing that, reverse engineer all the customers, as an example, in British Columbia and Vancouver. And where have they migrated? Are there any of our customers that are now decision makers, champions, and influencers in other companies in Vancouver that make up an ideal customer for ours? But realizing that we have the social capital now that we can get into that account much quicker. So that's kind of the first place. And then the second place is going to be around engagement. For whatever reason, InsideSales.com has done fantastic research on what are the number of touches you should be doing, how much engagement you should do in an account. And you realize that you really do need to touch an account more than you naturally think you do. And they've kind of plotted, you know, sales reps that will do a touch number 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 are much more successful. And then they have research that shows that most sales professionals give up too early. For whatever reason, the digital seller, exacerbates or it like has amplified the digital seller for whatever reason has even reduced the number of touch points. They'll send one LinkedIn message, one tweet, you know, and they'll say, oh, but he didn't get back to my email, so it must not have worked. The average decision maker uses LinkedIn for 30 to 45 minutes a week. Right. And you've got to understand that it is LinkedIn email is one medium. And to give up on somebody because they didn't open the one email. Did you actually think that perhaps it's what you said or when you said it? Or, you know, LinkedIn doesn't have an out of office box. Right. So there could be a variety of reasons why it's not working. So those are kind of two things that where I see failure all the time.
I love that last one. I think the number of people that, you know, we deal a lot in email and phone and not as much, nearly as much as you guys do in social, but I find the number of people that think that, that truly believe that if you sent one person an email one time that, you've burned that contact, you can't call them again.
As a decision maker. So you and I, CEOs, I get on average, say about 100 emails in my inbox, not all the other kind of junk boxes. Yeah. So 100 emails for me, I really rarely from 9 to 5 check emails. I really check them at night on the couch, glass of wine, but then I clean out my inbox on Sundays. So you can imagine how many emails pile up over the course of a week. And then you compound that with business travel. And so, like, I mastered the art of scroll delete. That one email is not going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're sitting there with the on the couch with your Pinot Noir and you're just sort of flipping through. It's very easy to just like, you know, fling that screen and let it easily roll by a name that I don't know with no catchy subject line or the first text is not jumping to me. Doesn't mean I read it and I was like, oh, this guy who sent me this email, I really thoughtfully considered this email and I don't want to do business with you.
I'm way more interested in my Pinot right now, by the way.
Totally. Yeah. I looked away and I was watching, you know, something on the television and yeah. Nope, I didn't see anything here.
Yeah.
Great. So let's pivot this. I know we've got some people hanging out on the call here. Can we open this up for questions?
Let's hammer it.
Perfect. Now, I'll be honest. I'm very new to go to meeting here.
Go to WebRate. Yeah. Hit the little question box or something. And one of the questions would probably be like, how did this webinar end up being just two Canadian guys on here? So.
Yeah. What's the deal, eh?
Yeah.
All right. So everybody, if you are listening, go into your GoToWebinar and hopefully you know this system and tool better than I do. And click on ask a question. And I'm hoping there's an ask a question box.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of people, the questions that have come in. Oh, I see them here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm struggling to find them here.
Okay, so Matthew is an example. So you see them coming in here now? I've got it. I clicked on the question. So I'll read them out. So Matthew would ask, how do I find Point Drive? Point Drive is only accessible to those that have LinkedIn Navigator. If you have LinkedIn Navigator, toggle to the right-hand corner. You'll notice there'll be a drop-down that will talk about LinkedIn Point Drive, and you will have access to it. Blair has asked, let me just kind of expand questions. What is the best way to segment your accounts by geography or vertical? There is no actual, and that comes to a corporate, that's actually a corporate initiative and reason why you choose geography versus vertical. And I'll give you an example of my business. 75% of every account that we win is in the United States. Another 15 to 20% sits in EMEA, and a couple percent is scattered between Australasia, APAC, and Canada, as an example. So we are not geo-based sellers here at Sales for Life. We just naturally, all of our lead flow is going to come from the United States. And because we're a small enough business, I don't really care if they come from Boston or San Francisco or London, England. We are more vertical-based concentration. We know from ideal customer profile data that technology, telecom, IT services, now moving towards medical device manufacturing are starting to move towards this. We know based on lead flow where we should concentrate our time. But there is no right or wrong answers. The reason companies choose geo, as an example, is they need to drown out competitors in local markets. So they realize, okay, I need a rep banging away in Massachusetts because I need to unearth all of the companies there because my competitors are doing it. That's kind of one of the reasons they would do it. How many times should I follow up with somebody before I move on? Great question, because every customer is different. We, as an example, have a 5-point touch cadence. We have trained companies that have 10, 15 touchpoint cadences. It really depends on any historical data that you've determined on, A, how big are these deals that you're chasing? Also, the type of buyer that you're selling into. If you're selling into IT, as an example, or human resources, these are two of the most peppered ideal customer profiles you could imagine. Because they have some of the biggest wallets inside an organization. So to get the mind share of a CTO or a CIO is not three touches, isn't happening. But my buyer is more amenable to conversation. My buyer is a VP of sales. We talk to everybody, right? And five touches, the reality is in our customers, you are either really trying to move your company digital and you want to talk to us, or it's not a top three priority. And for us, if digital is not a top three priority, we don't even bother because it's, the projects will fail before they begin. So we've learned that we don't need a lot of touches to gauge, are you interested or not? I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Can I ask you a follow-up question on that?
Sure.
So you've got a five touch pattern or a five touch. Yeah.
Or sequence, whatever you want to call it.
And once you run somebody through that, are they done forever, or will you come back to them?
And also remember that that might mean that that person might be done. That might not mean the account is done. Those are mutually exclusive things. But in my view, and no one is ever done ever. Right at the end of the day, and that's because I don't sell something that you buy it once and forever. You know, it's not like a CRM. It's embedded in your system forever. I sell knowledge and learning, which evolves all the time. So because you didn't buy in 2017, I'll get you in 2018 kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I only have one guy that I don't email anymore. And it's because he sent me a picture of himself holding a baseball bat.
I've never had somebody so mad that, you know, they did one of these to me and said, yeah, no, I've never had that.
I'm not sure if it was actually him or just like a stock photo he pulled off of the internet, but yeah, that was a funny day. We shared that around the office. We're like, let's definitely not email this guy anymore.
Greg asked a great question. Advise me how a digital sales rep can work for an analog manager. At the end of the day, you have to push that manager off their status quo. And to do that is sell them baby step stories. We advise our customers to do this all the time. Trying to get social selling or digital inside a company doesn't just happen by looking at the lagging indicator, sales results. What you want to do is show week by week when you're in your one-on-ones with your manager, talk about a little bit of a story. This is a way about chipping away at a misconception. That's what you're really trying to do. So week by week, next week you come in and say, you wouldn't believe it. The way that I actually re-engaged that customer was a LinkedIn email. And then your manager says, oh, great, good job. You chipped a little bit off the block. Then the next week you say, you wouldn't believe it. I saw that this company was sharing content on Twitter and it gave me a reason to pick up the phone. Little by little, you'll chip away at their misconception that the old playbook that they've run is the forever playbook. And the great sales leaders understand that whatever you did in your past company doesn't necessarily apply to the future one or current one. And that playbooks are evolving all the time. I learned this the hard way and almost went bankrupt and I had to start a business to learn the hard way that I had to evolve myself. Chip away at those misconceptions, to which point you'll start noticing it when they ask you more questions. How are you doing this on LinkedIn? Could you ever show some of the other teammates? Now all of a sudden you have an opportunity to engage them to say, you know, there's something bigger here that maybe we're missing. So.
I like that. You're chipping away, but not just with annoying them on a daily basis. Hey, why aren't we using Twitter? But hey,
stories.
I used LinkedIn and it actually converted this prospect. Yep. I think if there's one thing that every sales manager loves to hear and see, it's results. Well, and then,
do you remember when you wanted to learn to drive and you had to chip away at your parents and you would day by day, week by week, sell them a story that eventually they should let you take the car by yourself, go down to the grocery store? That did not happen on your 16th birthday. And you just said, Mom, Dad, give me the keys of the Cadillac. I'm going for a ride. You really did have to build stories and trust until which point they said, okay, here you go. So it's you have to sell your leader. Any other questions you want to field?
I'm still seeing a blank screen under the questions here. So I'll leave it to you to quarterback this.
Okay, let's see. One question here. Let me just expand it here so I can see it fully. Give me a second. It's around storyboards. I can't expand it any further. Oh, maybe if I click. Oh, here. You mentioned you build storyboards and preparation. Do you have customized messaging based on persona and key decision makers? Absolutely. And that's all part of storyboarding. We'll have frameworks of what we know can push buyers off their status quo. So for each one of our buyer personas, and our major three are the VP of sales, VP of marketing, and the VP of sales enablement, and each of them are measured and find different things important and prioritized, we already have knowing kind of our angle. With enablement, it's going to be about reducing the skill gap, competency benchmarking, making sure that you have your talent is equalized. For the VP of sales, it's all going to be about quota attainment, more money, hitting revenue targets. And with marketing, it could be about branding, expanding awareness, lead flow, all the things. Every one of these messages should be pre-developed. And maybe field one more.
Yeah, let's do one more and then we'll call it quits for the day.
Okay. What are some good initial contact email subject lines you have found that worked? Yeah, and I am far from the master at this. You know, there's classes and books just written on this topic. But for me, because I'm a huge believer in people-to-people selling, because all my emails and messages are almost always in video format, I use Vidyard viewed it to make personal videos. I'll use their name in the subject line. I love posing a question in the subject line. But as well, I'll just put in brackets, you know, quick video. These are three things that have worked to get people's attention. Their name are in it. Their name's in it. It's a question. And they know that there might be a quick video that they need to watch. So I love that expert.
Totally. I love that you're personalizing. You know, it's when you think about personalization, it's not just about the content in the body or the PS. It starts with the subject line. It's the reason you reached out. It takes shape in the body and it's sort of wrapped up in your CTA or in your signature.
100%.
Perfect. Well, I think that's all the time we have for us today. Jamie, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. You've been great. Aaron, you've been a little bit quiet over there, but we'll let you slide this time. But thank you, Jamie, so much.
Thank you for the invite.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Happy selling.
Take care.